Blog Talk Radio.
Miracle, God has brought to
come to your place. We're still in the book of Exodus, and we'll find again how the people of God will do something stupid. I, too, find myself many times having to take a test once again before I get it right. So I'm not so quick to judge these people as I was when I first read them. So you'll find in this show tonight that our God of love has the emotion of anger towards his people. Why do we think it should be any different for us if we do not obey? You also see how one of the leaders, Moses, overreacted by destroying what God had provided for him. God allows Moses to have to make the new tablets with the law on them. It always works better for God to allow God to do his complete work and stand firm to what God has intended. Otherwise, you may be doing some work with a hammer and chisel to put God's words down again. Have you ever seen God deliver someone from an addictive habit? Then the people pick it up again, and it's not so easy the second time around to lay these habits down. There's a lesson here for all of us to really pay attention to. The song to start our show tonight was an original from our very own Lyrical Lively, a.k.a. Rappin' Granny. We are making an effort to not play any song twice while we're going through this Bible study. You're welcome to submit a song that you would like us to play on our show. As always, we'll allow anyone to make a comment or ask a question to the topic of the show tonight. Just push the number 1 on your phone, and we'll identify you by the last 4 digits of your phone number when we place you on the air. Now, let's have a listen.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're going in now at Exodus chapter 25. We've gotten the Israelites out of Egypt. We have reaffirmed the covenant at the foot of Mount Sinai, and God has given one of 2 great gifts to his people, the gift of the law, the 10 principles by which a covenant people is to live with God and one another. Now, beginning in chapter 25, the Israelites will receive gift number 2. Gift number 2 is the tabernacle. The tabernacle is a physical structure that enables a sinful people to gain access to an infinitely holy God. In chapter 25, verse 1, we read, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Tell the Israelites to bring me an offering. You are to receive the offering for me from each man whose heart prompts him to give. These are to be voluntary offerings. And the offerings you are to receive from them are these: gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, fine twined Egyptian linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, the hides of sea cows or dolphins, which would come from the Red Sea, acacia wood, olive oil for light, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, and onyx stones and other gems to be mounted on the ephod and breastpiece.'" So all these items are to be brought voluntarily by the community. Where will the community get gold, silver, bronze, purple, blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and so on? They plundered the Egyptians. It was taken from Egypt. So we read in verse 8, "Then, using these items, have them make a sanctuary," or literally a place set apart, or tabernacle, "and I will dwell among them. Make this tabernacle and all its furnishings exactly, precisely, like the pattern I will show you." And we read, beginning in verse 10, very detailed descriptions for each item that will make up the tabernacle. The tabernacle will be a portable structure that can be set up, used, and then when the Israelites move, it can be taken down, packed up, and transported with them. It's a movable tabernacle. Now, this tabernacle all the details of it, and boy, do we have details, right down to specific measurements and specific designs for each item in the tabernacle. This tabernacle, I'll describe it here rather than read through all these chapters with very, very particular descriptions. I'll describe it for you. But if you go on the website, logosbiblestudy.org, under Bible Study Resources, Bible Commentaries, okay, I have about a 40-some page article that I wrote on the tabernacle that has pictures of the tabernacle and a detailed description of the whole thing. So you can go on there, read that article, or download it, and you'll have it in hand. Now, the tabernacle will start from the outside and work inward. In the Bible, chapter 25, we begin inward with the Ark of the Covenant and work outward. But I'll start on the outside. First thing we're going to do is set up a perimeter that will form a courtyard. And the perimeter will be made of acacia wood posts. Acacia wood comes from the acacia tree. And in this wilderness, in the southern Sinai, not a whole lot grows there. Acacia trees are plentiful. The acacia wood is a very hard wood, and the trunk and the branches of the acacia tree, they live a long time, very hard wood, and they're very difficult to work with because they have thorns on the branches that are the size of your little finger and very sharp. You know, if you're a bird, you have to watch out landing on one. You might impale yourself on the thorns. But the acacia trees are plentiful. They look like umbrellas. The trunk grows up perhaps, 6 to 10 feet, and then the tree spreads out virtually horizontal to the ground. And they're all over. They dot the wilderness all over. So they're plentiful. And it's about the only tree you're going to find out there in the wilderness. So the acacia wood is used for posts. And on the top of the post will be a silver capital or a silver top. On the bottom, a bronze socket that will hold the post. And the posts are set up in a perimeter to form a courtyard. Then fine twined white Egyptian linen is draped along the posts to form that perimeter. So you have a draped perimeter anchored on the acacia wood post. That perimeter is 150 feet long by 75 feet wide. That will be the measurements of the courtyard itself. 150 feet is not that long. Imagine 10 feet. That's your body length plus a few more feet, and 115 of those, right? 15 of those. That's not very far. So the tabernacle is not a big structure. It's relatively small. It's 75 feet wide, so half the width of the length, and that will form the courtyard. Now, on the east side of that perimeter of the curtains will be an entryway. And only a priest will be permitted into the courtyard. Regular old people can't go in. In fact, God will say, anyone who breaches that perimeter and goes into the courtyard, and they're not supposed to be there, whether man, woman, child, or animal, a rabbit goes in, shall be killed on sight. It is holy ground, and only the consecrated priests are permitted inside. So, the perimeter is set up, 150 feet by 75 feet. If you are a priest and you enter the courtyard, and the only way you can enter is from the east side of the perimeter, the first thing you'll encounter is a brazen or bronze altar. That altar is square in shape, and it will have fire burning inside, and on the altar you will offer sacrifice. In Leviticus, God will prescribe 5 great sacrifices that will be made at the altar: the burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering. 4 of the 5 offerings are animal sacrifices. And typically, the animal sacrifice will be a perfect, unblemished, year-old male bull which would be the most valuable animal that you own because it would make a whole lot of other bulls and cows, or a perfect unblemished year-old male goat, the second most valuable animal that you have, or a perfect unblemished year-old male lamb. Lambs are less valuable than goats. Goats lead lambs, and bulls are more valuable than goats. So any of those three would be sufficient, and depending on your resources, that would be the one that you bring. So four of the five offerings are animal sacrifices that will be offered on this altar. Now, beyond the altar, keep moving ahead, you encounter a laver or a wash basin. It's made of bronze. The bowl itself is made of one piece of bronze, hammered bronze, and it holds fresh water. After the priest goes through the ritual of sacrificing the animal, the laver is used to wash his hands before he goes into the tabernacle proper. Beyond the laver, then, is the tabernacle proper, or a tent. And that tent is 45 feet long by 15 feet wide. The entrance to the tent is on the east side, that is directly opposite the laver. When you step into the tent, and the tent itself is made of acacia wood boards, think of them as about a foot long, about a foot wide and high to make a room, acacia wood boards overlaid with pure 24 karat gold on all sides. The boards are anchored in a silver socket, so they stand upright, and the boards are lined up to form the long walls and the short walls of the width, the short wall of the width in the back. The boards, overlaid with pure gold, are all plugged into their silver sockets, and then the boards have rings on them, five rings from top to bottom, and acacia wood poles overlaid with pure gold are slid through the rings. That holds the wall rigid and upright in the sockets and anchored with the poles. And when you take the tabernacle down, you remove the poles, you lift the boards out of the sockets, and you pack everything up. So we have that golden wall inside and out, the walls of the tabernacle itself. Then over top of that are four layers of material that cover the top and drape down the side, four levels. Now, if you're a priest, and only a priest can go in the courtyard, and only a priest can go into the tabernacle proper, and only if he has a reason to be there. If a priest enters the tabernacle proper, the first chamber or room is called the holy place, and it is 30 feet long by 15 feet wide, so twice the length as the width. As you enter that holy place, to the left is a menorah made of one piece of solid gold with seven branches, and at the top of the branch is a tulip-shaped bowl that holds virgin olive oil and a wick. Virgin olive oil, when burned, doesn't produce smoke. You don't want to smoke up the inside, so it burns clean. That will be the light for the inside of the tabernacle, the menorah off to the left. Off to the right is a table made of acacia wood overlaid with pure gold, on which rest 12 loaves of unleavened bread, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel, in two stacks of six, and a golden cup with wine, bread and wine. Directly in front of the priest, on the far wall of the width of the inside, is an altar of incense, an acacia wood structure overlaid with pure gold, and on that altar of incense, the priest will burn incense before God. So, as the priest walks into the tabernacle proper, you have the menorah, light, the table of showbread, bread and wine, and the altar of incense, incense. Light, bread and wine, incense. For you Roman Catholics, does any of this ring a bell? This is where all the smells and bells of liturgy come from, right from the tabernacle. Beyond the altar of incense, right on the far side, is a curtain that attaches to the top of the tabernacle and drapes all the way down to the floor and touches either side. It's a separating curtain that separates the holy place, 30 feet by 15 feet, from the most holy place, or the Holy of Holies, which is 15 feet square. In that Holy of Holies is the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is an acacia wood box overlaid with pure gold inside and out, with a lid made of acacia wood overlaid with pure gold, on which are two cherubim, angelic figures, facing each other with the wingtips extended and touching on top of the lid itself. The two cherubim are made of one piece of solid gold, and they're on the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. Inside the box of the Ark of the Covenant is three items. Number one, the tablets of the Ten Commandments will go in the box. Number two, a golden jar filled with manna will go in the box. And number three, this happens later on, Aaron's staff that blossoms. A staff is a piece of wood that you use to walk with. It's a piece of dead wood. Aaron's staff will blossom and produce flowers. And that staff is in the acacia wood box as well. So the Ark of the Covenant is in the Holy of Holies. No one goes into the Holy of Holies except the high priest. Aaron will be the high priest in the first generation. And only one day each year, on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And we read about that in Leviticus chapter 16. Aaron the high priest, on one day each year, will enter the Holy of Holies, and he will present before God the sins of the people to be forgiven. And that's the only time anyone goes in there. Now, the pillar of cloud and fire that we encountered on the Exodus that led the Israelites to the Red Sea and blocked the Egyptian army from getting them as the Red Sea parted, the pillar of cloud and fire is a physical manifestation of God's presence. The pillar of cloud and fire. Well, the cloud and fire are present at all times. But in the daytime, all you see is a pillar of cloud. Because the bright sunshine of the Sinai, you can't see the fire flashing within it during the day. But as it gets dark, and you look at that pillar of cloud, you'll see inside of it fire flashing all around on the inside. That pillar of cloud and fire will rest over the tabernacle, specifically over the Holy of Holies. And it will be the physical manifestation of God. It will travel with the Israelites from this point on, at the end of Exodus chapter 40, all the way up until 592, and we read that the pillar of cloud and fire leaves the temple at that point and vanishes, and never comes back. The pillar of cloud and fire never returns after that. We read about it in Ezekiel. So this structure, this tabernacle, God has said very, very specifically, make it precisely according to the pattern I will give you. Precisely. Now, why so much attention to all the detail? Well, if you turn over to the book of Hebrews, way over to the end of the Bible, go to Revelation and turn left about a 16th of an inch, and you will be there. In Hebrews chapter 8, now this epistle to the Hebrews, we don't know who the author is. In older translations, it was typically ascribed to Paul, but Paul is most certainly not the author of Hebrews. Whoever the author is writing sometime prior to A.D. 70. In A.D. 70, the temple in Jerusalem is destroyed, and Hebrews assumes that the temple is up and operating. There are allusions to the temple operating. So it's written prior to A.D. 70, and it's addressed to the Christian community who are by background Jews. That is, first generation, second generation Christians who are of Jewish origin or Hebrew origin. And it's addressed specifically to that group of people. In Hebrews chapter 7, our author is speaking about Melchizedek, the great high priest that we meet in Genesis chapter 14. a very curious character. In Genesis, every important character is introduced by a genealogy. We know who he is and where he came from. But Melchizedek simply steps onto the page of Scripture with no genealogy whatever to introduce him. He blesses Abraham, the great patriarch, and Abraham gives Melchizedek a tenth of the plunder that he has, and then Melchizedek steps off the page of Scripture, and we never encounter him again. He's mentioned in the Psalms, and he's mentioned here in Hebrews, but he never appears as a character again. Who is that masked man? Who is Melchizedek? Well, in Hebrews chapter 7, we read that Melchizedek is the archetype of the great high priest. He is a priest of God Most High. In Leviticus, God will establish the priesthood. Aaron, Moses' brother of the tribe of Levi, will be the high priest, and Aaron's sons will be priests after him. The tribe of Levi will produce other priests by clan and family. Later, when David wants to build the temple, David will organize the tribe of Levi into an organized priesthood with each tribe and with each clan and family assigned to specific duties within the temple itself. That will happen later with David. But at this point, there is no priest among the Jews at this point in Exodus. But Melchizedek has appeared as the archetype of the great high priest. And that's what is being spoken of in Hebrews chapter 7. Now in chapter 8, our author says, the point of what we are saying is this. That is, the point of what we are saying about Melchizedek. We have such a high priest. We Christians have such a high priest, Christ, who sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, and who serves in the sanctuary, the genuine tabernacle set up by the Lord, not by man. Drop down to verse 5. They, the priests who serve at the temple, serve at a sanctuary that is a copy and shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle back in Exodus 25. This is why he was warned, see to it that you make everything according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. Because what you're building is a copy or a replica of the genuine article which is in heaven. That will blow your socks right off. The tabernacle that we read about in Exodus 25 through 40 is a copy or replica of the genuine article in heaven. And as the priest and the high priest serve at the tabernacle, later the temple, it will become a permanent structure in Jerusalem, so too does Christ serve at the genuine tabernacle, which is in heaven. That's why we have all the specific detail, because this tabernacle in Exodus will be a copy or shadow of the genuine article in heaven. That's pretty extraordinary. Now, back to Exodus. God gives all the details for the blueprint of the tabernacle while Moses is up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. What happens to the people who are down below? The last they know, Moses, when God spoke from the mountain, everybody's terrified. Thunder, lightning, fire, smoke, trumpets blasting. God speaks. Moses goes up on the mountain and disappears into the fire and the smoke. And then everything settles down. And no one hears a word from Moses or God for the next 40 days. Silence. Well, I wonder when he's coming down. A week goes by, 2 weeks go by, 3 weeks go by. Maybe he's dead. No. What are we going to do here? We 2 million people, are out in the middle of this vast and dreadful wilderness. The God that brought us out of Egypt, we haven't heard a word from him for the last 40 days. Moses went up on the mountain and disappeared into fire and smoke. We don't know what happened to him. We're in big trouble out here. Remember, we had four categories of logistical problems: food, water, leadership, I mean, these are really important issues. And now they're stuck at Mount Sinai. No leader. Apparently God has disappeared. We're all going to die out here. We certainly can't go back to Egypt. Remember the 10 plagues? Remember the entire Egyptian army drowned in the Red Sea? Remember the death of the firstborn? I don't think they'll welcome us back. What are we going to do? And they're getting desperate. They're getting desperate about what to do. Well, if you were an Israelite at this time, and all this were going on, who are you going to turn to for help? Chapter 32. As Moses is up on the mountain getting the blueprints for the tabernacle, chapter 32, verse 1, when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and they said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." Aaron answered, Take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, your daughters are wearing, and bring them to me." So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. The gold that they were wearing, that they had plundered from Egypt, Aaron took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Now that's important. Aaron took the gold that they gave him. He made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, and he fashioned it with a tool. And then they said, "Here are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of Egypt." Now, why would Aaron make a golden calf? Remember the gods and goddesses of Egypt? We're in a polytheistic culture. And what goddess is represented by the calf? The goddess Hathor, the goddess who protects and nurtures her people. And not coincidentally, the center for worship of the goddess Hathor is in the southern portion of the Sinai Peninsula. This is the goddess the Israelites turn to. And why would they not? They have spent 400 years in Egypt. These are the gods and goddesses they know. And apparently the God who brought them out of Egypt, who brought the 10 plagues, who kicked the butts of all the gods of Egypt, apparently he simply disappeared and abandoned us. And we don't know what happened to Moses. We need help here. So they call upon the goddess who is the primary goddess in the southern Sinai, the goddess Hathor. And they make an image of Hathor, the golden calf, and they're not praying to a golden calf. They're praying to the goddess Hathor, represented by the golden calf. Well, if you're an Israelite and you're in this situation, in this time, in this place, given your history, this is exactly what you would do, and they do. Now, on the website, when we were in Egypt in December, January, we were at Mount Sinai, right at the spot where this takes place. And there is a video I report on breaking news about the Israelites worshiping the golden calf. And it's shot right there in this location. And as I'm talking, directly behind me on the side of the mountain, you can see in the rock formation itself a calf, as plain as can be. When you know it and you look at it, there's the calf right in the rock formation. It's astounding. Have a look at it on the site. Now, when Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and he announced, "Tomorrow there'll be a festival to the Lord." So the next day the people rose early and sacrificed burnt offerings and presented fellowship offerings. The same offerings that God will prescribe later in Leviticus have been used in Egypt for 1,000 years. And they offer sacrifices to the goddess Hathor. And they have a big celebration, because now our goddess is going to rescue us from this mess that we're in. Camera cuts up to Mount Sinai on the top. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, because your people whom you brought out of Egypt have become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made for themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it, and they have said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of Egypt.' I have seen these people," said the Lord, "and they are a stiff-necked people. Now get out of my way, leave me alone, so that my anger can burn against them, and I'll destroy them. And then I'm going to start over and make a nation out of you." Well, Moses said, Lord, why should your anger burn against your people whom you brought out of Egypt? Don't you blame me for that. I didn't want to do this to begin with. These are your people that you brought out. Through this whole story in this section, it sounds like a husband and wife arguing over a disobedient child. You know, you come home from work and your wife says to you, do you know what your son did today? Wait a minute, he's your son too. And Moses and God argue about it here. Moses said, no, your people whom you brought out of Egypt, oh, this is great, you're going to destroy them. Here you were all high and mighty in Egypt, kicking Egyptian gods' butts, and you bring the people out of Egypt, and now you're going to kill them in the desert. Well, won't that do something for your reputation in Egypt? They'll say, you were unable to rescue your people. Or they'll say, you're a cruel and random god. Oh, this will be just great. Well, they have a big argument about it, and Moses goes down off the mountain. Chapter 32, verse 19. When Moses approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, his anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hand, breaking them to pieces on the mountain. The tablets of the Ten Commandments. He sees the party going on. He is livid. He smashes the tablets. Later, God will say to him, now take two stone tablets to replace the ones that you broke, and I'll write them again. And that's what happens later in the story. He smashes the tablets. He took the calf they had made. He burned it in the fire, ground it to powder, scattered it on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. And then he said to Aaron, what did these people do to you that you led them into such great sin? What were you thinking, he says. Oh, Aaron, who is Moses' older brother, is quaking in fear. Remember, Moses has a temper. We saw that temper when he killed the Egyptian slave master. We saw it when he witnessed the injustice against Zipporah and the sisters. And now, Aaron is quaking in his boots. Oh, don't be angry, my lord, Aaron answered. You know how prone these people are to evil. They said to me, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses, we don't know what happened to him. So, what was it Aaron had done? Chapter 32, verse 4, he took what they handed him and made it into an idol, cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. What does he tell Moses? I told them, whoever has gold jewelry, take it off. They gave it to me. They gave me the gold. I threw it in the fire. Out popped the calf. What a lame excuse. Moses saw that people were running wild, and then Aaron had let them get out of control and become a laughingstock. So Moses rallied the Levites, his tribe, and he said to them, verse 27, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, each man strap a sword to his side, go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and friend and neighbor. The Levites did as Moses commanded, and that day about 3,000 of the people died. 3,000 people are killed that day. It squashes the rebellion, and we build the tabernacle. At the end of Exodus, chapter 40, the end of verse 33, and so Moses finished the work. The tabernacle is built. And then at verse 34, chapter 40 of Exodus, the cloud, pillar of cloud and fire, covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle, and Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled upon it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, wherever the cloud lifted, or whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel during all their travels. The Israelites are out of Egypt. They have been given the law and the tabernacle. The covenant has been reaffirmed. The pillar of cloud has settled over the tabernacle. And now everything seems to be going well. When we turn the page to Leviticus, God will speak from within the tabernacle over a period of 30 days and give much more specific direction in how to apply these 10 principles and how to operate the tabernacle. That will happen next time in Leviticus.
So this has been part 12 in our Bible study, and we are at the end of Exodus. Blog Talk Mom?
Well, hello, Sister Starla.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and I've got my phone sort of hooked up to a speaker, so if there's any echo or something, let me know. And I do appreciate you and Wild Bill always for our Tuesday night Bible study. And I was taking notes on some of the things the gentleman had said. And I also appreciate you playing the miracle song at the beginning of the show. That was a high compliment. I don't take it lightly. I thank you very much. And so what all of y'all got on? I mean, you finished really early tonight, right?
Yes. We just go according to what the speaker has.
Yeah, it did come to a close. Oh, I see, because yeah, his class was actually that long, wasn't it, that thing, on this subject. That is so good, though. The tabernacle is one of the most fascinating parts of the Bible for me. I can go back to the tabernacle. I think really the link that made it so profound was Dr. John Shield taught on it when we first began to attend his church in Beebe, Arkansas. He actually had a large, like a replica in the front moving down the aisle, and then he taught on it week by week, and it was absolutely fascinating. Seems like it takes so many details that are just, I love all of them, but one of them, I'm not sure that he mentioned it this time. I didn't hear it, but on the outside of the tabernacle, they would put this badger skin on the very top so that if anybody looked down at the tabernacle, all they'd see, and badger skin is not anything beautiful or anything like that, but beneath that was like untold thousands of dollars worth of gold and silver and all of the wonderful things that were in the tabernacle. And Dr. Shield compared that to, many times people look at a person that is a child of God and they can only see the exterior, but if they could see what we have when the power and presence of God dwells within us, if they could see that, they would be like all the world is towards everything, they would desire it. But God doesn't give it to you that way. It's clothed in humility and beauty in so many different ways. Anyway, I'm sort of digressing or going a different direction, but I do thoroughly enjoy this, Sister Starla. Did you get anything special tonight?
Oh, I enjoyed all of it, but I enjoyed what you were saying. I really liked the study of the tabernacle. I believe Brother Francis, Philip Francis, taught on the tabernacle, and it is so, so interesting. I mean, you get so much stuff out of it, and it just, because it's visual, it just stays with you. I mean, I think it's just so interesting.
Our Sunday school teacher, when we taught on it in the adult class for several weeks, and then he passed out a card that you put in your Bible and you pray the tabernacle, and it is just beautiful. I have done that. And then Pentecostals of Alexandria, when they have their large camp conferences and everything, their prayer room was set up like that. I just think it's, especially if you understand and you studied it some, to enter into that part of it and to enter, you know, where he said enter into your his courts with thanksgiving, enter his gates with thanksgiving, enter his courts with praise. Got that out, didn't I? And Yes, and when you do that, if you really stop and just don't rush in to the presence of God, if I will do that with thought, or not just ritual, and I'm not saying, you know, that yeah, I can always do that, but if I really thoughtfully begin to thank Him, thank the Lord, the Creator of the world, for all of the awesome wonder, beauty, mercy, grace, long-suffering, you know, and thank Him for those things. And then when I begin to praise Him specifically for the time that I lost control, we were talking about it, we've had a lot of rain, intense rain, and when I was in Arkansas, I was going around the circle. It was like a clover leaf type thing there, North Little Rock and Little Rock. And I hydroplaned as I was going up and left the interstate altogether, went out, way out into the air, and came down on the next level. And no harm to me at all. And I will never forget as I left, I didn't know not to steer and whatever, but it wasn't doing any good. But as I left, completely left the pavement and went out, totally out into the air, I felt this peace. It was the hand of God. And then as I came down and hit the next level, I could look up and see people, you know, getting, they were just concerned. And all I had to do was just drive right back on to the interstate the other way. I was late for work. But,
wow.
It's just, God is so amazing. And I don't want to forget that. I don't want to take that for granted. I want to remember that. I want to remember the times that when I didn't know, have any idea ever what I was supposed to do. And all of a sudden, God would just open a door. Just open a door that I didn't even know was possible. The times He's healed me. And, you know, those are real memorable things. And with the children and with, just all through different things. And, you know, as you begin to talk with the Lord and you really take time to do this with Him, it prepares the table. And, I mean, you can go right on in to confession and asking God to just, you know, like the brazen laver, Lord, I want to be washed now. I know I was baptized in Your name. I know that my sins were remitted according to Your word, but I want to be clean now, Lord, of attitudes and all kinds of, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm like Keith Green. I want Him to draw me into a spirit where I cannot lie, into His presence. And not that you want to lie, but sometimes we just don't take the time to be totally open and honest with God and let Him wash us with His word. So this is beautiful. Every part of the tabernacle is, it's just so beautiful. And I thought it was, I've had several Bibles, but when it was talking about when Aaron was talking, I shouldn't laugh, I guess. But anyway, he said, well, they just threw all those jewels in there, and this is a calf jumped out, you know. And I wrote, boo. How he got out of that one, but that was so cute. It just popped out. It just came out. So, anyway, he was, I guess God was, and I don't agree with that it was like a man and a wife arguing between Moses and God. I see it as a great, absolute necessary test. A test from Moses that under the greatest pressure that he still had God's people at heart, and then God could trust him with the rest of it. Because I know all of us have faced that. Well, we've been tested to see if we just say, well, I'll just throw it down. I'm just through with it. But Moses said, if you kill them, kill me. I mean, he did sort of reason with the Lord, like, well, what are they going to say about you? As if God really was worried about what anybody was going to say about him along the way. But it was interesting. It's a lot of food for thought. But it's just a little different in my mind. Was it with you too?
Yeah. Well, we have Wild Bill with us. Wild Bill.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Fine. How are you?
We're just talking.
Just a talking? Yeah, one of the things he said, that he does have a certain teaching style that sometimes I find offensive, because I did such a in-depth study of the tabernacle at Christian School in Beebe. We actually built a tabernacle to scale, and then Brother Shield kept that for years and used it as a teaching aid that was there. But and there again, we're going through this man's Bible study in a year. I'm sure if you was to take one of his complete Bible studies on the book of Exodus, there would be a whole lot more detail in the way he puts this together. But one of the things I found interesting was where you go and you read, and he tied it into Hebrews, where the pattern of the tabernacle is the same as a tabernacle plan in heaven. And something about that, I don't believe that there is an actual tabernacle in heaven that is to the same pattern as what we have here. I just felt quick into the scripture where it says, well, we have bound on we bind on earth shall be bound in earth, and bound in heaven shall be bound in heaven. Totally got that backwards. But anyway, to the thing about there is a pattern of salvation that God was trying to put in place for this world. And I think that that pattern, the completed pattern as it's meant to be, that being born again, a new creature, a new creation, to go in and have the earnest of our inheritance now, the Holy Ghost living inside of us, I think that is more about, I mean, he almost made it sound like Jesus was having to tend to the temple like he was a high priest or something like that, which I know the symbolism of how he was a high priest who went before us, and his blood is what covered the sin. But with all that being said, I don't think that there is an actual literal tabernacle in heaven. I could be totally wrong. I mean, there could actually be, but I don't think it's meant to be a working tabernacle, because what we have now is a new plan that did away with all the things that had to be done there that was something visual to see, and now it's done in a spiritual format with Jesus Christ becoming the Lamb that took away the sins of the world. So before, it was something to put things off from one year to the next. But I thought that was interesting. It made me want to look into it a little bit further to see what it said. The other thing that they didn't really bring up, and I think fits so perfect in the tabernacle, from the outside, when you looked at the tabernacle, there was really nothing to look at. It looked like some big old ugly tent covered with a bunch of skins and everything. But on the inside, all these rare gems and gold and silver and ornate artwork of how these things were put together, the Ark of the Covenant. You know, you can't put a monetary value on it, but what a value to know that you're carrying along something where God dwells. His Spirit is right there with you that's going along as you're traveling across the desert. And now, when you look at things today, to understand that on the outside of us, there's not a whole lot to look at. You know, when you're born again, you know, what you see is still what you get. If you're bald, you're still probably going to be bald, and you know, your hair is not going to change color or anything like that. You're not going to get 4 foot taller or anything. And wings is not going to sprout out your back like what you would think an angel would have. But what changes the beauty part of the things that God and his benefits is what happens on the inside. And even with that, we are still earthen vessels. We were talking about that at churches last weekend. We still struggle. We still strive. We have to deal with things of flesh on a daily basis, and then the spirits of this world, and then the temptations of Satan. All those things are real, and all those things are still there. But man, the beauty and the joy and the power of what's inside of us when that thing changes, and when you stop and really think about the benefits that God has for us, I wonder how many benefits God has for us that we don't take advantage of. It's there. It's an automatic thing when you become a child of God. You're going through the process. This is what he's established for you to have. And then it's kind of like having insurance and not taking advantage of using it. When you go to the doctor, you're just paying your doctor's bills when the whole time you had insurance that would cover it. And I think sometimes that we get out of place and forget who God is and what he's established for us. Even with all the symbolism from the Old Testament with the tabernacle, we forget the things that we need to remember, and that we remember things we need to forget. But that's all I had to share tonight. I was really, you know, a little disappointed he didn't go more into the pattern of the tabernacle and things. But in one part, I understand what he's doing with this Bible study, trying to get through the Bible. So what do you think about that, Blog Talk Mom?
I really like what you're saying, and it brought it to closure too on the pattern thing, because a pattern, like when you're sewing, you know, you get a pattern, and then the pattern is the pattern, and then you get the real thing when you put it together. So the pattern was finished. It was brought together when Jesus was crucified. That veil was rent from the top to the bottom. That signified you didn't have to go through all those different steps through another person, but Jesus was the lamb, the priest, the everything that was needed. And that's really significant. I appreciate you saying that, because I knew that. Actually, I didn't catch what he had said about the heavenlies, but it's really in the spiritual realm. It is completed. That was the pattern, and that's really what is so significant about everything that God did in the tabernacle or in the Old Testament, prophetically about Jesus, about the plan of salvation, how it would be, is it clicks, it goes right together, it fits, it's a perfect fit. And the more you study it, the more it fits. It doesn't pull against it in any way. And the presence of God, like you were saying, that's the main thing, is that God prepared a way in our obedience to his way, specifically, exactly his way. We will enjoy the very presence of the Creator, the Almighty God, walking with us, living with us. It's a relationship, so beautiful. And like you were mentioning, can you imagine how it will be when we aren't held to this earthly realm and the realm of suffering and whatever? And I don't want to leave. I really like what you said, Wild Bill, about things that God has prepared for us that we aren't even taking advantage of. Just in every breath we breathe, every move we make, every thought, to have it linked with him, with him and with his presence. And, it's just beautiful. And that Jesus, in that one, the Word made flesh and dwelling among us, fulfilled everything about the tabernacle. That is so beautiful. God is more than we can even start to comprehend, but I don't think that he is being stingy with allowing us to have that time with him. If we'll do it, he will reveal himself in deeper and greater measures. I know Sister Charlotte was sharing with me a week or two ago how she was approaching God in her fasting, and how God revealed to her through that things that she would not have seen. Didn't mean they weren't there. They were there, but she would not have seen it unless we are willing to fast, willing to pray, spend time with God, talk to him, set the other things aside. He's such an awesome God. I am so amazed that at my age that God has just been so good to me, to let me just be in his work and in his kingdom and to touch people. And I had a sweet, precious experience. I'm working on this. I go out, you know how I do, trailer parks, whatever. And this little boy was following me. It was pouring down rain. And usually I always have certain things I can give him. And he had his little bicycle. And he'd been up to I'm having a porch Bible study when they come. And so he just got a new bicycle. It must have been his birthday or something. And I had taught him a song, Put Jesus First and Everything Behind You. Put Jesus, Jesus First, with the hand motions. And so he just looked at me just as cute as could be and started singing that to me. It just blessed my heart. Aww. I've only done it once with him, and he knew it. And I just shared it with the lady there that I was teaching the Thirst for Truth Bible study with. And so she then saw him doing it, and it blessed her. It was just been a real special day like that. And everything in the tabernacle had a beautiful, awesome purpose. The light that never went out was to never go out. The story of the Maccabees, when they, I believe it was the Maccabees, when they had the, they just people, the enemy had destroyed the temple, and they didn't have enough oil but for one day, and but they went ahead and used it, and God blessed it, and the oil never went out. And, you know, it's a God thing. If we ever lose track in any way that God is God, the creator of the world, he's ours, and we're his. And that's wonderful. That's awesome. And that's eternal. And that's exciting. It's just, and the tabernacle reminds me of that, like while Bill was saying. I didn't remember them building it in that class. I just remember that we had it in the Christian school, and it was beautiful. All the garments of the, everything that the priest wears, everything has some significance to it, and that's real interesting too. So thank you, Wild Bill and Sister Starla. I have enjoyed it, and I look forward to next week.
Well, we sure enjoy what you add to the show every week, and we so love you and appreciate all your work. You are a worker for the kingdom, and you will have many crowns to put at the feet of Jesus. It is amazing that what you do is just, what an inspiration.
It's really a privilege.
It is a privilege. It is a privilege to serve the Lord. And I do love the Lord, and it's amazing the things that God does and the things that he does through us. It is, he's an awesome God.
Awesome. Love him.
Well, we want to thank everybody for listening this week and every week, and those who are faithful to our show every week. And we'll see you back here next week at your place. Good night.